Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
And to all our friends joining us today, coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. This is Laguna Roundtable. As the little promo says, it is Sunday, December 13th. It's a little chilly out there, and it might be a little wet tonight. Hopefully not. Because we have a slight reason for not wanting it to be wet, is Kenny Loggins is in town for the KX935 Winter Festival. It is our annual winter fundraiser tonight at the Irvine Bowl, 5 o'clock start time. So just let everybody know to be out there. You might see some of the Laguna Roundtable out there, or you might not. We'll keep it a mystery. Because you know what? With our political opinions, we really can't tell people where we are just for our own personal safety.
Or they might be screening us out as well. But actually, the doors open at 5 o'clock. The show begins, I believe, at 6.
Yes, and there's a couple of preview bands or a couple of intro bands that go on.
David Allen Baker is going to be there tonight. He's absolutely wonderful. If you've had the pleasure of seeing him over at the Montage Resort, he's absolutely terrific.
In addition, there will be the Shadow Boxers, as Dr. Ari said, my co-host for Laguna Roundtable. 5 o'clock for the doors open for the Winter Concert Classic, presented by the Laguna Beach Montage and KX935. There will be hot chocolate and cookies, and Santa will be there for the little ones, so bring them along. And they can visit Santa and give them their wish list so that all parents can be terrorized by the wish list that they need to get for the $1,300 presents for their children. But that is tonight, and that is a fundraiser for the station. As you know, we are a community-supported station, and with events like this is what allows you to have fine programming, like Laguna Roundtable, Full English Breakfast, which is coming up next, on the air. And this morning, by the way, Dr. Ari, why don't you say hello? I didn't get a chance to give you a hello.
Good morning, everybody. Beautiful day coming to you from Laguna Beach. We're so glad to be here with you this morning, so thank you for tuning in.
And one other thing to actually, let's go a little bit of the show show overview right now. We're going to talk about the a terror update for the San Bernardino terror shooting. Donald Trump on immigration, which Ari's can't wait to talk about. Congress's Bergdahl report came out over Bo Bergdahl, the American soldier that was traded for 5 key Taliban fighters from Guantanamo Bay. And we have a new mayor in town as of the last Tuesday. And we'll talk about new mayor Steve Dictero. But we're going to kick off with one of the other things we want to talk about musically oriented, because we are a music station, except for these brief interludes where we try to educate everybody on news, politics, current events, is that Frank Sinatra was 100 yesterday. Would have been his 100th birthday yesterday. And you'll be hearing a little bit of Frank coming up a little bit later in the hour. But Ari, what's your thoughts on, or what's your thoughts and memories of Frank Sinatra?
Well, I don't remember him. An awful lot directly.
Sure.
Obviously, he wasn't one of the Rat Pack.
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah, he was the founding member of the Rat Pack. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, him and Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin and, a bunch of other people. Angie Dickinson was part of the Rat Pack, I believe, too.
Okay. But, we needed to dress it up just a little bit, but that's a terrific group of performers. So I remember vaguely through that, but I don't have a lot of direct memory.
Sure. I mean, that's what, Vegas, that's what would made Vegas or made some of Vegas. Palm Springs, they did a lot of time down in Palm Springs also and made that area famous. And that's when a lot of the places were built down there. But it's quite a bit of music history. There was a special last week to him. But, it's kind of a legend. You know, there's lots of stories about his connection to the mafia, allegedly, or whether there is a mafia or not. But, quite an American music. I'm not sure. I think he's got something like 23 Grammys or something. So he's, one of the most awarded artists in American history. And, just kind of classic 50s, 60s. According to the ads, drank Jack Daniels. But you think of that being the quintessential martini era,
That's the way I think of it.
Sure.
But as a Jack Daniels aficionado myself, I can understand the allure.
Not that we condone drinking for those that are under 21, but for those that are of legal age may partake in a beverage. Okay, let's get into some of the news. We'll start off with the update on the San Bernardino terror incident last week. We've learned more about the participants. We've learned more about the situation. Unfortunately, some of the funerals were started yesterday for the 14 people that were killed in the tragedy and the terrorist attack in San Bernardino. We learned a little bit more about Mrs. Terrorist, and again, we're not going to glorify them by putting their names on the air. The wife came on a fiancé visa, even though on a Pakistani visa, because even though she was raised in Saudi Arabia, she lived in Pakistan. So that's kind of interesting how she, and she, by the way, on the visa, she gave a fake town in Pakistan where she lived. Doesn't exist. But our expert screening was not able to capture that. Now, we've been told for these 10,000-plus Syrian immigrants coming in, Syrian refugees, that we have a foolproof process for screening them. But we can't even get a terrorist in training, a radicalized woman who's coming in to kill people in this country. We can't even get her hometown checked out. Dr. Ari, how does that make you feel about bringing in these Syrians?
You know, I'd like to say that I have confidence in our administration and in our immigration officials to screen properly.
And I'd like to say that I have $1 million in the bank, but I don't. So in that case...
Well, you know, I think it's a terrible condemnation of the system when you have somebody who can come in with a visa that is from a fictional town and somehow that's not caught.
And the problem, too, is that, I mean, this is something that was actually catchable. This was a factual thing you could have checked. Right. With the Syrians, we also learned this week with the Syrians that they may have gotten control of a couple of Syrian passport offices and may actually have Syrian passport printing materials and actual machines that the Syrian government, when it was in control of Raqqa and those areas, for actually printing authentic Syrian passports. So imagine a few ISIS fighters with quote-unquote real fake passports. I mean, they're not fake. They're actual
forged
passports.
Well, they're real forged passports, but they're forged. Yeah.
They're not fake. And those coming into the country when you don't have a database to check them against and they're claiming they're just poor refugees, that seems like quite a bit of a problem. And again, would give us a second, third, or maybe even a 12th thought about should we be bringing these Syrian refugees in? I mean, my thought on this is I've seen pictures in Saudi Arabia where they have 2 million tents, air-conditioned, sitting out, ready to go for refugees to come in. Why don't we ship them off to Saudi Arabia? But I don't think Saudi Arabia wants them. I don't think that's the reason. I believe those are tents that are used during the Hajj pilgrimage for people that they could basically use until the Hajj comes up again next year, and they could be housed there for the Syrian immigrants. I would think that if I'm a refugee from somewhere, that I would want to be able to, I would want to go back as soon as possible, as soon as there is peace in the area, to where I came from, to where I was born, raised, and have lived my life. I wouldn't necessarily want to go 8,000 miles away or 7,000 miles away or 3,000 miles away to Germany. I would think I'd want to go back. And so why don't we keep these people as close to their home as possible so they can go back to their to whatever normal way of life is left after the Civil War and the ISIS problem is taken care of?
Part of the challenge, I think, is that this is not a single event which is problematic here. This is a history in a lot of the Middle East and Syria in particular. Before the current ruler, Bashar al-Assad, his father was also president and dictator of Syria.
And you need to put president in air quotes.
Yeah, well,
At
the very least, air quotes, you know, and you always have to worry about presidencies being handed down from father to son. But, you know,
Bush?
You know, sometimes you just kind of step into these things, but... you know, certainly not in a democratic society. I mean, here at least we have, we have a democratic society, and if the next generation is going to provide the desired skills and political positions of a democracy, then so be it. But that certainly has not been the case in Syria.
Right. And I wouldn't want to comment on dictatorships where husbands hand them down to wives either, but go ahead.
No, you know, we certainly wouldn't want to do that. But, you know, that's the glory of having a free and open society is we can actually vote for the best candidate, not just for for a family name. So,
and by the way,
and if that happens though to be a legacy, then so be it.
And by the way, in our topic section in the second half of the hour, we will be talking about an update on the 2016 presidential election, which we've both just been alluding to. So go ahead, Dr. Ari.
Oh, no, not at all. But, you know, I think that's part of the challenge that we're seeing in the across the Middle East is that the Middle East, I believe it was Churchill, but I may be mistaken, so please forgive me on this, laughed that, you know, Syria and Transjordan were created sitting in Damascus, and it was created with a stroke of a pen. You know, unfortunately, so much of the Middle East is just simple Western fabrications, and they were created. We created nation states where none had existed previously, and we did so without any consideration for the ethnic minorities and even for ethnic majorities across the region. And so, I think a lot of the problems we're seeing are an outcropping of that.
No, you're correct. And many times they were drawn just as whatever convenient lines that were drawn,
right,
like you said, without really a lot of regard for ethnicities that were in those areas. And that's why, for example, like today, the Kurds are the largest ethnic minority in the world that do not have their own state because it's all cut up between Turkey and Syria and Iraq. They've kind of been triangulated in a negative way, shall we say, for where their ethnic region was there in northern Iraq, you know, northern Syria, southern Turkey. So, yeah. Right. So it was drawn up by, as a lot of people said, a lot of old white men after World War One. When the breaking up of the Austro-Hungarian/Ottoman Empire was done after the end of World War One,
right, and we had in that area we had the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which chopped up Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon. I believe were the main areas. Syria still believes that they have rights to the coast of the Mediterranean, which now includes Lebanon, but Lebanon also was a fabrication that is very problematic because you had a relatively small population, but you had Muslims and Christians, and we had different sects. And what they tried to do was create a balance of power so that certain offices were held by Christians and others were held by Muslims. But the problem is that you only had a population of a couple of million people. And when the demographics changed, of course, power needed to shift. And nobody, of course, wants to give up power, which led to the Lebanese civil war in the early 70s that carried through much of the 80s.
Right, and which basically was ended by Syrian occupation in many ways of Lebanon. But we got off topic, though. Let's get back to the San Bernardino terror trial. We also learned that the guns were purchased illegally by a brother-in-law,
right,
who has conveniently checked himself into a mental health facility. But I believe somehow the FBI has managed to extradite him from that mental health facility, and he's being questioned. And I would assure that he's certainly in a lot of doo-doo, shall we say, today for the FBI. And I'm sure he's getting sweated pretty well about what he knew and when he knew it.
And this week, I've also been seeing ongoing reports, and in fact, this morning's news said the same thing, that they're searching a pond.
They're dredging a pond, they're going through a pond. It's called a lake out in San Bernardino, but it's more like a pond. It doesn't have a freshwater supply. It's just a bunch of water was thrown in there, and it's pretty icky and murky in there, for lack of better words.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what they find. The reason they're searching it is there are reports that the terrorist couple came by and were seen throwing things into the lake shortly before the terror spree on the afternoon of December 2nd. So there may be hard drives, memory cards, chips. They found their phones. One of the things that's interesting about this, and one of the things that FBI Director Comey spoke about this week is that the Americans' fascination for the or the technology firms' fascination with end-to-end technology is creating, or end-to-end encryption, excuse me, is creating quite a bit of a problem now. Because basically, if you're communicating over one of these end-to-end encrypted communication tools, like Snapchat for one is one,
right,
and there's another one called Zillow or something, not Zillow the real estate app, but it's something like that, Zillow, I believe it's called, and you can do it over Wi-Fi. So I could talk to Dr. Ari over Wi-Fi, even though we're using phones, if I'm in a Starbucks and he's on his home Wi-Fi. And we could actually, if we were in an area where we could move with Wi-Fi and not lose that and not go over the cellular data network, the police would not be able to track us because there is nothing moving there. It can't track an IP address because of the encryption as you're moving with it. If you switch to a cellular data network, your old cell phone towers, then they can follow you. And in fact, if you take a look at some of the publicly available flight tracking applications out there, you can see that there are Department of Homeland Security planes that have been circling various mosques in San Bernardino. And I believe they are tracking cell phone movements of some of the people out there. So it's an ongoing investigation. As we said last week, while the event happened over a couple of minutes, it's going to be weeks and or months till all of the details come out about what happened. There's also talk, I saw, I don't know if you saw this, that there was the same individual was working on a possible attack back in 2012.
Right. I'd read that as well.
So ongoing situation. But as far as the visa information, somewhat a little bit confusing and scary about if we still want to bring in the Syrians. But moving on to talking about immigration and Muslims, Dr. Ari, I think you are very eager to talk about some of the comments from your future vote, Donald Trump, Donald J. Trump's comments on immigration and Muslims this week.
Yeah. Yes. My support.
But for all the people that aren't listening, he is wearing a Trump Make America Great t-shirt again.
Yeah, right.
No, actually, he's not wearing a Trump t-shirt.
But. Yeah, I appreciate that. I might not get out of the studio alive if I were to be wearing.
If I'm sure if Jason Fetty coming up next saw you, he would not let you out with a Trump t-shirt on.
So I am not one of Donald Trump's acolytes. So that aside, you know, I just have so much trouble with so much of what Donald Trump has to say, but particularly his fear-mongering against Muslims.
Fear-mongering.
You know, I understand there are certainly legitimate reasons to be concerned about terrorism, about the danger lurking hidden among us. But by the same time, I think what's happening now is we're seeing so much of this incitement, so much of this fear-mongering about Muslims in general. We've had a couple of incidents in the last week where we had people who were verbally assaulted by a woman. I thought when I saw the video come up that that it was physical attacks, but it was just a verbal assault on people by a woman. They were at a park here in California. I saw another incident that I was reading about that someone threw a pig's head, and pigs obviously are considered to be dirty animals.
Unclean,
in
yes.
Islam, they're unclean. A pig's head was thrown at a mosque.
And a mosque down in the Coachella Valley was burned on Friday.
And a mosque was burned firebombed. On Friday, yes. Firebombed, and they have a suspect.
Yes.
But I think the kind of fear that Donald Trump has been sowing, it manifests itself in a lot of ways. Well, people are angry, people are scared, and they're the villagers proverbially chasing people out with pitchforks. I think that's a very scary thing in our democracy.
One man's alleged fear could be another person's secure or concern for national security. So let me ask you a couple of questions.
Well, but the problem is that there's so much fear that's being sown here that no Muslim can be trusted, that it seems like open season on our Muslim friends and neighbors.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Are we being attacked by Canadian Presbyterians?
I'll let you finish your rhetorical question here.
It's not rhetorical. You're actually
it's verbal. It's a rhetorical exercise.
I would like you to answer. Are we being? Have we been terror attacked by Canadian Presbyterians?
I'm going to play along here. No, we have not.
Have we been terror attacked by Belgian Huguenots?
No, we have not.
Have we been attacked by South American Catholics?
Again, we have not.
Okay, so have we been attacked by Middle Eastern Muslims?
Yes, we have.
Okay, ding, ding, ding. I think we have a winner here, folks.
No,
we've narrowed the problem down.
Yes, we may have identified. We have identified the genesis of the problem, but the bigger problem is we don't cast aspersions on an entire group.
We've also identified the source of the problem, too.
But look at the problem that Italian Americans went through a generation or two ago, where everybody who is Italian was associated with the mafia. We can't cast that aspersion on a whole group of people because of the actions of a portion of a population. They don't represent all Italians, just like these terrorists don't represent all Muslims.
Again,
but that's why we also don't want to call them Muslim terrorists. They're terrorists who use Islam, and there's a profound difference in that. Because it is not Islam which is the problem per se. It is people who are misusing it.
But let's put a little forensic or a little police work into this, a little detective work into this.
Okay.
If you've got a videotape of a 4'9" redheaded guy who weighs 300 pounds on video stabbing somebody to death, Are you going to pull over four black guys in a car for that murder?
Probably.
No, you're probably not, but...
No,
thank you.
Probably.
Thank you for
Let's
your pride
not ourselves, you know.
Are you going to pull over three Islamic men in a car? Three Middle Eastern-looking men with beards for that crime?
You know...
The answer is no, thank you, I'll help you out.
No, I'm not saying...
But if you show up with a 300-pound redheaded guy who's 4'9" in the car, you might want to pull him over.
Absolutely.
This is simply forensic work. This is detective work.
Yes,
you
but
know
we
who's
also,
attacking you. You know who to pull over. It's very simple.
Well, we know who the suspects are, but we can't damn everybody with that.
Well, if you happen to be
guilt.
A 4'9" redheaded guy who weighs 300 pounds, man, I would stay in my house that week because it's going to be a bad week for you.
Yes, but we don't believe in vigilante justice in this country,
we should go burn the guy's house down.
Well,
we're just saying if he passes a police car, you might want to pull him over.
But when we have people like Trump talking about if he's elected president, every Syrian refugee who is accepted into the country would be expelled. When you have,
I think
him
he's
talking
walked that
about,
one back.
You know, prevent. Well, he doesn't really walk anything back. But when you talk about preventing immigration entirely from Muslim countries, when you have people like Ben Carson who say he would not want a Muslim to be president of his country, I know people who are Muslim American.
I don't think he said he wouldn't want a Muslim. I think he said that the tenets of Islam do not match well with the American Constitution and would be problematic. If one was elected, I don't think he was going to have them thrown out of office.
Well, I don't think the...
You got to stop watching Rachel Maddow.
I don't think the tenets of Islam, per se, would prevent anyone from being a good president any more than I think somebody who is Catholic.
Well,
again, when John Kennedy was running for office, they didn't think a Catholic could represent this country.
Because he was going to basically
be
beholden to the Pope.
He was going to answer to the papacy. So.
And he wasn't, and he didn't, and those things were overcome. But we're not talking about... You're talking about societal myths versus actual murders that are provable and terrorist events that are provable and incitable.
Okay, let me give you another example, though, and I apologize because I don't like to interrupt. You know, if there is a country in the world that should have concern about its Muslim population, let's just say. Okay, it would be.
I'm going to guess, I guess Israel.
It would be Israel.
Ding, ding, ding,
there's
ding,
no
thank
question
you very
about
much.
It. Okay, Israel's population is about 20-25% Muslim. Okay, but Muslims are allowed to serve in the parliament, the Knesset. Muslims are allowed to vote in elections. They have full rights. Now, I will be one of the first people to admit those rights are not always as fully protected as they ought to be. I don't think that Israel does a perfect job, but I think they do a very good job of recognizing that there are good people.
But if I'm correct, those are actual Israeli citizens who happen to be Muslim. Well,
they're Israeli citizens because Israel conveys citizenship to all people who were either born in the area or would accept Israeli
citizenship. But if you just walk across the border, which, by the way, now has a big fence on it because they found the fence has been fantastic about reducing incidents of terrorism in Israel, if I'm not correct. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. It's been very effective.
So Trump and the fence guy that he wants to build you mock in Israel, though, they found it to be a very successful way to keep terrorists out. And I'm pretty sure in Israel, if you just happen to wander across the Golan Heights and make it in Israel, they do not bestow citizenship on you. My guess is that your keister gets planted back to wherever you walked from with two guys holding Uzis, would be my guess.
Well, after a very long stay in an Israeli prison.
Okay, so your example doesn't really work. But let's go back in history to the American time.
Well, actually, it does. We're talking about two different things. We're talking about immigration versus,
And we're not saying we're going to throw citizens out. We're talking about not letting potential immigrants in from Muslim countries. And we're also talking about rethinking the admittance of Syrian refugees. But let's go back to another time in our history when we had problems with Islam. 1979, the glory days of Jimmy Carter, the only man who may keep Barack Obama from being the worst president ever. And
George Bush. Thank goodness we have George W. Bush there to break everyone's fall.
Let's not get crazy about this now.
Or realistic.
In 79, Carter banned Iranians from coming into this country who are Muslims. And he also deported Iranian students and required all Iranian students to show up at immigration offices to register. in case we couldn't track them or didn't know where they were.
Okay.
So we hadn't even had bombs going off in America. We didn't have Iranians coming into the country and shooting the place up. And Carter went that far. Hard to believe that Carter has more chutzpah and has more guts than Barack Obama does. But, you know, again, that's kind of an interesting situation. So this has been done before, as where all of the liberals are screaming this week, oh, this would be tearing up the Constitution. This would be horrible if we did this. We actually have precedent where we've done something very similar to this in the past, and by a Democratic president.
We weren't at war.
We weren't shooting them.
They had.
We were not landing troops in there, except for the seven.
They had our hostage. They had American hostage. They had violated. But they have international.
Iranians got seven Americans right now hostage. They're holding hostage. After we gave them nuclear weapons.
Well, we didn't give them nuclear weapons. I feel like we're kind of bouncing from one thing to the next.
Right, but the point is that you're basically, this is not something that's unprecedented. This is not something that's been done.
I want to do a little bit of fact-checking on that, because I don't...
Oh, come on. It's been all over the press this week. Rachel hasn't been talking to you about it?
No. I hadn't heard anything much about it on Fox, but I only watch Fox a bit intermittently.
And in fact, there is actually, CBS finally dug up the video clip that they have the audio of Carter making the announcement to the American public of what he was doing. So we need to look into that. Trump on immigration, we'll talk a little bit more about it in the second half of the hour. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Armed Services report that came out this week on the Bergdahl. By the way, this is KX935 Laguna Roundtable, KX935, with your host, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari Grayson. Armed Services Committee came out this week with a report on the Bergdahl Exchange. Ari, do you want to give a little bit of background on the Bergdahl Exchange and remind our listeners, in case they've forgotten exactly who Bo Bergdahl
is? He was an American soldier in Afghanistan who, for one reason or another, and I think that still remains somewhat murky, is he left his post, was supposedly heading towards another American military position in Afghanistan, was taken hostage by the Taliban, and kept in prison for, 5 years?
Five years. I believe it was 5 years.
I thought it was 3.5 years or so. But 5 years, it was an awful long time to be held in captivity.
Yes. And we do owe the right to soldiers to bring them back because we put them over there.
But then there was a very sudden and dramatic release of five Taliban detainees who had been
high-value targets that were deemed to be so dangerous they were not to be let out of American custody at all costs.
Yes. And they were.
And we did.
And on very short notice, I believe it was only an hour or two of notice that was given to Congress. There were a few people within Congress, I think, on Armed Services.
Right. The Gang of Eight that are for national security items and military matters. I don't know. There's four in the House, four in the Senate. They're committee heads of various National Security or Armed Services Committee heads.
Right.
And they're called the Gang of Eight.
But the law does require a 30-day notice to Congress
before
release.
And they gave them between an hour and 2 hour notice.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous.
So the House Armed Services Committee was a tad bit upset by this.
And I think they have every legitimate right to be concerned.
Their report came out this week, and here are the four findings of the report. The transfer of the Taliban Five violated several laws, including the National Defense Authorization Act for 2014. Constitutional arguments offered to justify the Department of Defense's failure to provide the legally required notification of the committee 30 days in advance are incomplete and unconvincing. Violation of law was also threatens constitutional separation of powers. Committee was misled to the extent and scope of efforts to arrange the Taliban Five's transfer before it took place. DOD's failure to communicate complete and accurate information severely harmed its relationship with the committee and threatens to upend longstanding history and traditions of cooperation and comity. They're saying that the DOD, through the administration and through the executive branch, lied to Congress and broke the law on this transfer. Dr. Ari, what's your take on this and the report?
Oh, you know, I have a lot of problems with releasing five Taliban prisoners in exchange. You know, I understand the importance, no soldier left behind. I think this is a very wise policy. Oh, and I think it also opens the door. And my understanding is that, you know, the Taliban, sent out, you know, news blasts or whatever when this transfer occurred, suggesting that they need to take more Americans or more Westerners hostage. So I think there's a real danger.
Right, but this is driven by
doing that.
This is driven by Obama's or President Obama's policy to get rid of Guantanamo and close it at any cost as quickly as possible. So he's just basically willy-nilly trading these people out to get Guantanamo closed down.
I think that's reading an awful lot into the actions. I don't think it was.
I think that's actually being kind.
I don't think that was the intent, was to clear out a Guantanamo. I think we need
to. Well, they've pretty well stated that's their goal.
That may well
he
be a goal,
an executive
but we
order
also
to
need,
close it.
Yes, but we also need to find some place to put these
Well,
prisoners.
We did. We shipped them off to Qatar. One of them, by the way,
has
reappeared in the field as a deputy commander for a unit of either ISIS or the Taliban. So basically, these five guys, they assured wouldn't go anywhere. They were stuck in Qatar, I think, for 9 or 12 months. Day one, after that, gone, into the wind, and back onto the battlefield. So we've just put five key Taliban leaders back into the field, either to help ISIS or to help the Taliban reorganize.
And
so,
I find it very disturbing to release five of these prisoners, even though I understand the underlying premise of not leaving any soldier behind. But when you're endangering so many other lives as a result of that action, I'm sorry, you have to also look out for the greater good, and I don't think that was the case here.
But the greater good is Barack Obama's legacy.
Well, I'm not sure that was particularly a goal either, but, as I say,
sure
from my perspective, sometimes you do have to look at the greater good, and if it's going to cause imminent threat to other soldiers and to Westerners in general, I'm sorry, but then I don't think the deal should have been made, and I don't think it should have been done without the full consent and knowledge of Congress.
Well, very good. Okay, KX93.5. Laguna Roundtable with your host, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari. We're going to talk just real shortly about, or just kind of more of an announcement, just kind of commemorate an event. Saudi Arabia, the first time in their history, women have got the right to vote and were able to vote in elections this week or last week. So, Dr. Ari, your thoughts on that?
The election was actually this week. There were, I believe, around 1,000 female candidates.
Oh, very good.
But
there have been candidates. I believe there have been female candidates allowed in the past.
But there's only been a small handful.
Right, and they don't have any women that were allowed to vote for them.
And exactly.
Until
so I don't know what level of success these women achieved in their goal to get elected, but I believe there were something like 2,100 women who were registered to vote, so it's still very modest. I'm sure there's still a lot of concern and a lot of angst on the part of many women in terms of crossing their husbands. But absolutely, and the more women register, the more empowered other women will feel and the safer they will hopefully feel in being able to go out and register to vote and vote themselves.
So the next time Hillary stands up and whines about a war on women because the American public doesn't want to pay $3,000 a month for Sandra Fluke's contraception, she might want to take a look at Saudi Arabia where there really is a war on women rather than making up a faux one that she can try to run on.
Well, it's not just an conscious war on women. You have to recognize that we're dealing with an ancient culture here where women were considered to be not even second-class citizens. They don't even have a right to go out
of
the house.
Basically, they were chattel, property.
Unaccompanied. Keep in mind, women did not have the right to vote till early in the early in the 20th century, here, even in this country.
Well, we're still talking 100-plus years.
Absolutely. So. It's been a long time, but even at that time, it was considered somewhat controversial. The next thing they'll want to wear pants and work outside of the house. So bringing a ancient culture into the 21st century is far overdue. They should have been brought into the 20th century, but it's nice to see that some progress is being made. And hopefully we will begin to see this sea change. There are some really, really strong women out there, whether they're Saudi or elsewhere across the Muslim world or the Arab world. They need that empowerment. I think we've seen that in other cultures and societies before, that when women contribute, then you begin to see a society really and truly progress into a progressive and a vibrant society.
Well, let's not say progressive, but let's say they progressed into something more advanced.
No, the progressive was my intentional choice of words.
And
here.
It was why I decided it wasn't the appropriate choice of words. So
they're not, it's not, when you look at Saudi Arabia, we would consider it nominally a conservative society. We have to remember
again,
that.
Well, I think you're kind of using conservative in a negative connotation.
No, I'm not using it as a conservative connotation. I'm acknowledging that
yes.
conservative and progressive have different meanings in different cultures as they apply
levels,
to those
different relative levels.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Without any question.
Sure. Okay.
No, I would not bestow upon the Saudis at this time the honorific of being called a progressive society.
I thought you were going to say you weren't going to bestow upon them the you weren't going to insult them and call them conservatives like the American presidential
candidate. No. But I'd like to see you laugh early in the morning.
Thank
it brings
you.
A smile to my face as well, Jim.
Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. We are going to talk about, we have a new mayor in town. You want to tell the...
Not exactly a new sheriff in town, but a new mayor in town.
No, but we had a new police chief in town who's been on our air.
Actually,
and hopefully we'll get her back at some time in the near future.
Our new mayor is Steve Dictero, so
yes.
Congratulations, Steve.
Congratulations, Mr. Dictero.
I think we're each comfortable in calling Steve a friend of ours. And
absolutely,
a friend of, and certainly a friend of the station.
And
we've
we'll
had
probably
him here
be
before.
Running for, by the way, as we come close to closing the book on 2015 here in the next few weeks, we'll be moving back into election season in Laguna. We'll have two seats that will be available on the city council, and Steve Dictero will be one of those. I don't know if he's running. I haven't spoken to him about it. But I would suspect if he's mayor, he's probably going to be running. But then Elizabeth Pearson was mayor, and she didn't run. So
we'll see.
But I suspect he's probably going to run.
Yeah, I would assume Steve is going to run
again.
And
then also
but we
Bob
don't have
Whalen's
any...
seat will be up for election, too.
Okay. Well, we don't have any inside information yet on whether Steve intends to run. But he has served as mayor three times before in our recent history. So it's not as though he's coming in here, you know, all wide-eyed and you know, idealistic. He knows the challenges that face him in dealing with that position.
And
as
Mayor Dictero, if you're out there, I will reach out to you. But call this your first invite. You're welcome to come on the Laguna Roundtable. I'd love to have you on. Talk about what you want to do for the 2016 year in Laguna. What sort of ideas you've got, agendas you want to put forward. We call on you to come on the air, and we'll talk about it.
Absolutely.
Let our listeners know.
Steve is not only a wonderful interview. I've enjoyed the many personal conversations that I've had with him. We don't always agree on everything,
sure.
But I always find that you know, he's willing to listen, and he's always thoughtful in the information that he provides.
So. I think I've interviewed him twice, once with a prior host. And once by myself, and it's always been interesting, and you know, gives insightful answers to the questions, and is truly interested in helping the community out.
Now, as mayor of our fair city, he doesn't really have any additional powers beyond.
It's a mostly ceremonial, cut ribbons and things like that. Yeah.
So basically, he's the queen of Laguna Beach.
Well. I wouldn't want to say
well,
that.
Well, okay, yeah.
The Laguna, king of Laguna Beach.
Okay, Laguna Beach, we don't want to throw that term
right,
out
the
lightly.
King of Laguna Beach.
Similar to the Queen of England is what I meant. It just came
yes.
out.
But we all know
double
the true,
entendre.
But we all know the true ruler of Laguna Beach is John Pedig.
So. Yeah, exactly. Our city manager.
Yes, we've actually called to be on the air, too, who, you know what, not really responsive to being on the air with us.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know
really
why.
Know.
Maybe I need to kind of poke him just a little bit. See
yeah,
if you can
well,
get John in here.
What happens when you corner an animal, but so be it. Okay, Laguna Roundtable, we're going to play a little music here and take a break. We'll be back. We're going to throw a little Frank Sinatra out there as we're talking about Frank's 100th birthday yesterday, a little The Way You Look Tonight. Laguna Roundtable, we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. Yes, you're lovely. With your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love you and the way you look tonight. With each word, your tenderness grows, tearing my fear apart. And that laugh wrinkles my foolish heart. Lovely, never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Touches my foolish heart. Lovely, don't you ever change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Just the way you look tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I singing there, folks? A little Frank Sinatra?
No, I don't think you were, Jim.
Oh, wow. Hey, Laguna Roundtable, that was your co-host. Hopefully, I don't know if it'll be our future co-host, yeah. Dr. Ari Grayson,
and that was
taking rim shots at me this morning.
And that was the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra. What a phenomenal yeah. talent!
Like I said, I was talking to Dr. Ari in the break. The time in American history when you didn't have to worry about putting warning labels for explicit lyrics on record albums, and there really were record albums in those days.
Oh, actually, you know, there were. So, I did actually, while we were on break, I did look up your comments on Jimmy Carter, and to see how much truth was in that. There is supposed to be a video. Now, though, we want to fact check here. We want to make sure that we're accurate in our information. And I did see that there is a video. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet from ABC, so I want to look at that later on. What's true about it is Jimmy Carter did announce sanctions against Iran in 1980, including the cancellation of visas for Iranian citizens. And this is by Snoops. If you're familiar with Snoops. Snoops does fact-checking on...
Yes, not Snoop Dogg, but yeah. Snoop.
No, Snoop Dogg. What's false about it is Carter's sanctions resembled Trump's suggestion to ban Muslims from entering or immigrating to the United States. So I want to check into this a little bit more deeply, and we can discuss this again next week. But there's certainly some element to truth to it. So, you know, that part's certainly been verified by Snoops, and let's see what else we can dig and find on this.
Yes, and for any of you else that would have any comments that want to talk about Dr. Ari's questioning us on the air, you can send us email to lagunaroundtable@gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter at Righty Jim, and you can find us on Facebook. Please leave comments or questions you'd like us to answer or topics you'd like us to discuss on this show. Laguna Roundtable would be Laguna, I believe it's Laguna RT on Facebook or Laguna Roundtable on Facebook, Google, or search for that on Facebook. Like us, and we'll be here, and we'd love to get your questions, comments, and input. Okay, we're going to move on to our topic of the presidential election update. We haven't done an update for a couple of weeks. Let's start off with Hillary's ISIS solution. Hillary's ISIS solution is love. From her quote this week, we've got to do everything we can to weed out hate, plant love and kindness. So I believe she is taking the Ari Gold, not Ari Grayson, but the Ari Gold theory of hug it out. She wants to hug it out with ISIS. I'm pretty sure that the ISIS commanders aren't really looking to hug it out with Hillary or anybody else. Dr. Ari, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it sounds really cute, and I love that, you know, hugging it out. But the reality is what Hillary was talking about was not ISIS in particular. What she was talking about is having respect for all individuals and all citizens here in the United States. And
I don't
even
see respect in there. I see weed, hate, love, kindness.
But she wasn't talking about ISIS. What we have to do is we have to recognize that there are good people all around us, and we need to treat those people with kindness and respect. We need to make sure that people feel included, that they have a part of the society. Now, that's not to say when you have dysfunctional people like you had in San Bernardino that any measure of kindness is going to change their thinking. They see us as being evil incarnate, and even when we're kind, they don't recognize that for what it is, that we're being respectful of them, their faith, their humanity, and so forth.
Well, to many of them, the only thing respectful is to convert.
Absolutely. And you know, when you can't deal with extremists in the same way that you would deal with, you know, I hate to use this term, but other people, you know, I was going to say normal people, but other people. There's nothing you're going to do to change that. There are people out there who would look at Mother Teresa and say, oh, she's only doing it for the glory, you know.
She's doing it for the press.
She's doing it for the press. You know, she's doing it for, you know, for whatever reason. But I think one thing that our enemies make the mistake in is when they mistake kindness for weakness, because America is not a weak country. Hillary is not going to be a weak president if she is elected. I think she will be very strong.
Will she be very strong when she's federal inmate 1217642 wearing an orange jumpsuit?
Again, a little bit of wishful thinking there on the side of the conservatives.
Not wishful thinking.
And you say that because you don't have a candidate who can defeat her in the general election in 2016. And I understand the hurt feelings in
that. Well, speaking of the general election 2016, will we get there after a brokered GOP convention? There's lots of talk this week about what's going to happen with the GOP convention. Even though it's, you know, I think this is kind of silly considering we haven't even cast a vote yet. We have not selected a delegate yet. They're already talking about a brokered convention because of the 15 people running in the field. So I think
more of it is the concern that, you know, Trump has perhaps reached his cap.
His peak.
You know, sure. He's at, you know, 27-30% somewhere in that range.
32 in some polls, but yeah.
You know, so.
The thing really comes down to is when the field eventually gets winnowed, the field will get winnowed.
Yes.
It may take till New Hampshire to the field starts getting winnowed. Who, you know, where are the, you know, is Trump got a group of people that are Trump supporters? I don't think, you know, I just don't see Jeb Bush's people, if Jeb drops out, going to Trump. Don't see Ben Carson, or not Ben Carson, but I don't see Lindsey Graham's six supporters going to Trump.
Neither of his supporters?
It was six.
Oh, six?
Six,
okay.
Supporters. I'm sorry, maybe he's only two.
No, maybe he's tripled his.
Yeah, maybe he's got a larger campaign staff. I don't see, if Chris Christie dropped out, I don't see Chris Christie's people going to him. I don't see really anybody's people other than the only person I could possibly see would be Ted Cruz's people going to him. But Ted Cruz was recently endorsed by our own Congressman Dana Rohrabacher. And Ted Cruz is currently leading in Iowa and running second. So I don't see Ted Cruz dropping out at all at any point. I see him going right through the convention. The point is, where is Trump going to continue to increase, or where is Trump going to get to the magical 50% number from? Because I don't see anybody's people. I don't see John Kasich. I mean, I don't see anybody. I mean, maybe six Carly Fiorino supporters, maybe. But outside of that, I just don't see there being people that are going to be going to Trump from other people. And I've seen lots of people who are Republicans saying that, you know, they would pretty much, you know, stick a red hot poker into my eye and vote for Trump. And it takes them a while to answer the question. And I'm not really sure what their answer is. They will not vote for Trump. In fact, there was a group of evidently high-end donors in Beverly Hills a couple weeks ago had a you know, a little get together, and basically said they'd rather vote for Hillary than Trump, which is, I to me, ridiculous, but so be it.
Well, I think that's part of the reason that the GOP seems to be so scared about this is that,
well, I don't think Trump, scared, or concerned.
Concerned, okay. Because Trump will go into the convention with his 20-25% supporters regardless.
Right, but it depends.
So he's going to have he's going to have a major voice at the convention. So if nobody is able to get to the 50%.
But if somebody does get the 50%, it's mostly
over.
Mute.
Yes.
But if nobody does get the 50%, yes, then you're talking about a brokered, then you are talking about what we're talking about here as in a brokered convention. We are still over a month away from a single vote being cast, a single delegate being selected. Now, it will happen pretty quickly when it starts at the end of January. But until that happens, you know, we're purely talking speculation based upon the polls. And, I mean, I can see, I could see some people going to Trump from the people that are dropping out. I could see Rubio picking up support from some of the people that might be dropping out, that are in the singles or in the zeros. I believe there were two or three candidates that were literally polling 0.0, and not just Jim Graham. So, you know, eventually these people are going to have to drop
Lindsey
out.
You mean Lindsey Graham? I think you just said Jim Graham.
I just say, who's Jim? Jim, who's the other, who's the 16th candidate? Jim, is it Jim Gallagher? Jim, there's a 16th candidate named Jim something.
Not important. No, obviously.
But it's not important. You're actually right. It isn't important because of how badly the guy polls.
No, but I think the point is that Trump will have a major voice at the convention. And what is that going to do to bringing in immigrants into the Republican Party? How is that going to affect the Hispanic vote? How is it going to affect the African-American vote? How is it going to affect people who are of Middle Eastern origin, whether, you know, they're from, you know, Egypt or Saudi Arabia or Iran or wherever they might be from originally? I want to make sure that I'm accurate in this. Obviously, Iran is not part of the Arab world. They are Muslim, but they're not Arab.
They're Persian.
They're Persian. But where is that support going to come from that the Republicans are going to need in a general election if they have Trump out there on the stage touting his immigration policies as they stand today?
Well, by the way, it was Jim Gilmore I was thinking of. Sorry.
Jim Gilmore, okay.
Yeah. To me, he's the 16th man. Or the 15th man now since Jindal's dropped out.
Okay.
But yeah, the basic question is going to be, where is the 50% going to come from?
Well, we have another Republican debate this week, which is actually, I think, going to be really fascinating.
Coming up, the kiddie table will be 3 o'clock Pacific, and the adults will be 6 o'clock Pacific from the Venetian in Las Vegas.
Who's left on the kiddie table? I'm just curious as to...
I don't know. I don't think they've actually announced it yet. There's actually a question whether Rand Paul's going to make it onto the main stage or on the kiddie table. Or whether Chris Christie is kind of a switch between. Looks like Christie's good. Looks like Rand Paul may fall out of the adult table and in into the kiddie table.
How about Carly Fiorina?
She's still on the adult table.
She is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And is the only person at this point that has moved from the kiddie table to the adult table.
Okay.
Chris Christie could do that. Now, he went from the adult table to the kiddie table. He could move back to the adult table. CNN should be releasing the criteria fairly shortly because the debate's on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's in 48 hours.
Yeah,
basically.
So I haven't heard anything yet from them, and I don't know when they're going to release it because I would think it's going to matter because, you know, if you think you're in the adult table, you're going to have to be there 3 hours earlier. So at least your schedules need to be, you know, campaign events that are going to be planned because Nevada is one of the first four states. So, and I will be doing from a mysterious location some radio commentary for the Radio America Network for that show. I'll give you a tweet out where you can listen to that and where you can listen to me do my debate analysis from Tuesday night.
Great. Well, have fun at that. That should be an interesting day. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's move on to the on the tables. We're going to kick it off first with Dr. Aries. You're doing Muslims Amongst Us. Do you want to preface this or just want to jump into it?
Oh, let's just jump on in.
Okay. Here we go. Here is Dr. Aries on the table.
I'm Ari, and I'm putting Muslims Amongst Us on the table. When someone says to you, where are the peaceful Muslims and why aren't they speaking against and combating violent extremism? I hope the following letter helps you provide a strong response. In short, there are good people and powerful voices all around us. All you need to do is take a moment to listen. Anila Ali is president of the American Muslim Women's Empowerment Council. In February 2015, she served on the White House panel on countering extreme violence. I wish to share with you a letter Ms. Ali recently penned. It is with grieving hearts that the American Muslim Women's Empowerment Council, AMWEC, expresses deepest sympathies for the innocent victims of the tragic and senseless massacre in San Bernardino. The AMWEC board, which includes Pakistani-American women, is also troubled to learn that a female of Pakistani descent has been identified as one of the killers in this incident. We, like other Americans, cannot comprehend the level of evil behind this plan. Incident has left us paralyzed in grief for the victims and incensed at the heartless nature of this crime. On April 12, 2015, we stood with law enforcement and passed a resolution to create a community of Muslim women that will stand against violent extremism and become the first line of defense against radicalization. We acknowledge we have work to do, and with growing backlash, our work will be difficult. But we are Americans. We are resilient, and we are strong. We urge all Pakistani women to speak up and unite as Americans against the claws of radicalization. Hatred and bigotry that have infiltrated our homeland. No excuse or justification is acceptable any longer, and we resent statements that put blame on American foreign policy as they marginalize Muslims and will fuel backlash. There can be no excuse or justification for this heinous act of terror. At this particular time, our Pakistani-American hearts bleed with the victims of terrorism in San Bernardino. The same day Ms. Ali's open letter to the community was published, she learned that her inspiration, her mentor, her beloved father, passed away. Her father, Qutbuddin Aziz, was a diplomat and renowned scholar. He served in public relations minister and as information minister at the Pakistani embassy in London from the late 1970s through the mid-1980s. Aziz was also a lecturer, broadcaster, social worker, journalist, educationist, academician, and writer of international repute. Among Anila Ali's first words upon learning of her father's passing were, quote, "A man who dedicated his entire life to serving humanity and a country he fought for is no more." Although Aziz is no longer with us, his actions, his lessons, and his legacy will remain strong and vibrant. He lives on through the tireless efforts of his daughter, Anila, and her dedication to building a just and peaceful world. My heartfelt sympathy goes to Anila Ali and her entire family during this time of profound loss. Although he will no doubt be missed greatly, seldom has any father left this life with such reason to be proud and hopeful. I'm Ari, and I just put Muslims Amongst Us on the table.
Okay, Dr. Ari, thank you for that. Actually, we're going to run a little bit late. I'm going to do mine for tape. We'll put it up on the website. I'll send it off the dark. We'll post it up on the website. Don't forget tonight, everyone, Kenny Loggins concert. Irvine Bowl, 5 o'clock. Please be there. We are a community-supported station. And concerts like that are what allow us to put fine programs like this. And coming up next, Full English Breakfast with Jason Fetty on the air.
And my apologies to you, Jim. There was a lot there I wanted to make sure that I expressed to our listeners today.
Not a problem. And by the way, you're working to get her for an interview coming up in the near future?
We were supposed to have our interview this week, and when I contacted her earlier in the week, I learned of her father's passing, and she immediately had to hop on a plane and get to Pakistan, literally halfway across the world. So we will reschedule at her soonest convenience. But I really do truly want our listeners to have an opportunity to hear her speak directly and to learn some of the things that she has been doing.
Yep, and thoughts and prayers go out to her and her family.
Thank you.
And we do look forward to interviewing her coming up in the near future. But we're going to finish off today with a little Kenny Loggins because of the concert tonight. Coming up next, Jason Fetty, Full English Breakfast. I believe Jason will be at the concert, might even be the MC with Tyler tonight, possibly. And here we go, and have a good weekend, and see everyone at the concert tonight.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, then I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life? You didn't run, you didn't lie, you knew I wanted just to hold you. And had you gone, you knew in time we'd meet again, for I had told you. Ooh, you were meant to be near me. Ooh, and I want you to hear me say we'll be together every day. Got to get you into my life. What can I do? What can I be? When I'm with you, I wanna stay there. If I'm true, I'll never leave. And if I do, I know the way there. And I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day
of my life.